Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, September 15, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, and I'm working from my home studio in New York. And there was big news out of New York yesterday. Billionaire Steve Cohen reached an agreement to buy the majority ownership of the New York Mets. He becomes the richest owner in baseball, at least it will be, assuming that he's going to be approved by the other owners. He'll need at least 23 of the other 30 owners to give the approval for this deal to go through. We'll be talking about that coming up with David Schoenfield. The Athletics and the Mariners played a doubleheader under a haze of smoke. Wildfires on the West Coast have suffocated much of the Pacific Northwest with unhealthy air conditions that brought into question whether or not the games would even be played. The air quality index in the Seattle area surpassed 200 on Monday, a number considered, quote unquote, very unhealthy. A's manager Bob Melvin said to reporters, "No one said a word. I heard 200 was the cutoff level to start, and my understanding was way over that both games." It'll be interesting to see if somebody steps in now, the Players Association, Major League Baseball, because when you hear those readings and you look at the conditions, it's kind of ridiculous they even played. But they did get through a doubleheader after the Mariners won game one. In game two, top of the first inning, Oakland had a chance to break open the game.
From Yakavonis on the way, swinging a high fly ball deep left center field. On the run to the warning track. Kyle Lewis near the wall, leaps up, and he makes the catch! Holy smokes, Kyle Lewis over the wall in left center, brings it back, and he takes a grand salami away from Ramon Laureano. Holy smokes, Lewis timing that leap high over the wall in left center field out near the pen, and that will retire the side. What a play.
That from 710 ESPN Seattle. But Oakland would take control of this game. And Jake Lamb, who signed a contract officially with the Athletics after being let go the other day by the Diamondbacks, came through for Oakland.
And now the 1-1 pitch, breaking ball, high drive into right. Lopes going back. Lopes at the track. He'll turn and watch it fly. And welcome to the Athletics in a big way tonight, Jake Lamb. And the A's have taken a 9-0 lead.
The Reds and the Pirates played a doubleheader. The Reds would wind up sweeping, and Tyler Stevenson got a big hit in the bottom of the seventh.
Stevenson, 4-for-10 on the year, and he crushes this one to left field and deep. Way back there, it is gone! Tyler Stevenson, a pinch hit, walk-off, two-run home run to lift the Reds past the Pirates, 3-1.
From 700 WLW, Trevor Bauer in that game, 6 1/3 innings, one run allowed, 12 strikeouts. Overall, he's got a 1.71 ERA in 9 starts with 83 strikeouts in 58 innings. But the two big games of the day, no question about it, first in the American League Central. The White Sox and the Twins, the White Sox coming into the day holding a one-game lead over Minnesota in the American League Central. Dylan Cease was on the mound for the White Sox versus Jose Barrios. It was 1-1, bottom of the eighth inning, and this happened.
You know, the interesting thing here is if the bunt does get down, you have second and third. Twins are going to bring the infield in for Madrigal, who's been something of a ground ball hitter. They creep in at the corners. Adams ready to swing, and he does slash on the way through, and the Sox take the lead. Adam Engel with a ruse, and it's 2-1 Sox.
Jason Benetti with that call on the White Sox television network. So the White Sox win the game, and they increase their lead over the Twins to 2 games. And, of course, out in San Diego, the Padres, the up-and-coming Padres, facing the Dodgers, who won the National League West, it seems like forever. Dinelson Lamet against Clayton Kershaw in this game. The Dodgers took a 1-0 lead, but the Padres tied the game in the sixth. Trent Grisham at the plate.
Grisham, Tatis, and Machado here in the bottom of the sixth inning. Padres trailing by a run.
In the air to deep right field for Grisham. It's gone, and the Padres tie it 1-1. One swing of the bat will get it done.
Sixth home run surrendered by Kershaw this year. And there's Grisham's reaction. Looking towards his teammates. And then when he rounded third base, some chirping from the Dodgers dugout, he retorted, still seems like there's some barking going on.
Yeah, absolutely. That call, of course, from Don Arcillo and Mud Grant on the Padres television network. What happened was is that when Grisham hit the home run, he stood at home plate and immediately looked into his dugout because he knew he absolutely crushed this home run. Kershaw was staring at him and walking toward home plate. I can't confirm this. I thought I heard Clayton yell at him something like, go. In other words, start your trip around the bases. It really made the Dodgers dugout very unhappy, which is why they were yelling at him. There was stuff said after the game, too. We'll get to that in a moment. But it was one all in the seventh, and the Padres broke out.
One out, two on, and Jorge Onya, the batter. Onya sends it to left field down the line. Peterson headed over, is not going to get there. Coming around from second is Myers. He'll score, and the Padres take a 2-1 lead. Jorge Onya.
He is so strong, he takes a huge cut that if he gets beat with a pitch, it's a four-seamer in. Look where he hits that ball. Off the label. Softly enough to where it dumps in there. No chance for Jack Peterson. Glenn Hoffman gives the green light to Will Myers. Padres got action at second and third.
Garcia hits onto the ground to first. Muncy is going to come home with it, and safe at the plate, getting in from third is Profar. He loses the tag. Padres take a 3-1 lead.
And they would go on to score five runs in the seventh inning. They win this game, and at the end of the night, the Padres, within a game and a half of the Dodgers at the top of the National League West, and also at the top of the National League. Dave Roberts talked about the unhappiness of the Dodgers.
You know, I don't mind guys admiring a homer. You know, certainly it's a big game, big hit. Really like the player. But I just felt that, you know, to over kind of stay at home play, and certainly against a guy like Clayton, who's got the respect of everyone in the big leagues and what he's done in this game, I just took exception to that because I think that there's a certain respect that you give a guy that, you know, if you homer against him.
Jay Stengler, the manager of the Padres, talked about Denelson Lamet's fine outing and Trent Grisham.
Yeah, it's a good way to, you know, start the series for sure, and we needed Lamet to do what he did tonight. You know, he going seven strong and just making pitches, and you know, Kershaw was so sharp on their side. You know, you watch from the side, and there's just not many hittable pitches throughout the night. Both guys were on their game. And you know, both guys basically just, you know, ran out of pitches there getting around the 100 mark. But Lamet was outstanding again. And then offensively, we just kept grinding. Even though we were down, we were, you still felt good. You felt like something good was going to happen. And that's what happens when you just keep chipping away. And we were fortunate enough to... Obviously, we tied it up and then was able to break through. I thought our guys had really good at-bats. And then, obviously, Grisham, his second time up, was able to get something to drive. And I think that kind of sparked us a little bit.
Now, before we get to David Schoenfield and Paul Imbecides to talk about everything that happened last night with that and some other topics, with the NFL's week one in the books, Fantasy Focus Football is essential listening for all of the fantasy football managers out there looking to tweak your roster. Matthew Berry, Field Yates, Stefania Bell, and Mike Clay are here to help you decide who to pick up, who to drop, and who it's way too early to panic about. For example, last night, Taylor, my son has Steven Gutzkowski as one of his kickers. And he's a Titans fan, by the way. So I don't know how my son is feeling about maybe picking up another kicker.
He's going to have to listen to Fantasy Focus Football. They'll probably give him the right answers over there.
And if he can break away from online schooling, he could also watch Fantasy Focus Football Live weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern on YouTube, Twitter, or the ESPN app. And you can listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code baseball. That's code baseball. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Welcome to the show!
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show!
Welcome to the show, mate!
Welcome to the show! Whoa!
Welcome to the show, baby!
You're in the show with David Schoenfield.
And David Schoenfield covers baseball for ESPN. I gotta say, Padres-Dodgers, maybe the only really important series we're gonna see in this weird 60-game season, Dave. It did not disappoint game one.
Wow, what a game. I mean, the Padres are amazing. They're, what, 21-5 now in their last 26 games. Some controversy with another Padres home run. 1.5 games out of first place. Man, I love it.
Yeah, tell me what your read is on all these two teams now. Padres now 1.5 behind. They have a chance, you know, it's not only for the National League West, it's for the number one seed. And let's face it, whoever wins the National League is going to be the favorite going into the postseason to win the World Series. What's your read on where these two teams are? Because Dodgers, you know, they've had a tremendous season. There's no question they have more depth than any other team. But it feels like a lot of postseasons we've seen in recent years.
Yeah. Look, right now, look, clearly the two best teams in baseball. But it does... I know they say momentum doesn't exist in baseball, but it feels like that's what the Padres have, not only with, you know, all those trades they made at the deadline, but just the star-level talent, whereas the Dodgers' star-level talent hasn't really played up to that level this year. Cody Bellinger still struggling. Max Muncy still struggling. Really, the strength of the Dodger team, although it wasn't last night, has been their bullpen. You know, the lineup still great, but the Padres lineup is a little better. You know, they got these final two games of these series, last two games they play. You know, it wouldn't shock me if the Padres leave Wednesday in first place after sweeping this series.
Man, and you mentioned the controversy during the game. Trent Grisham with the Padres down 1-0 hits a home run off Clayton Kershaw, absolutely killed it. And then he stood at home plate and then looked into his own dugout. He never looked out at Kershaw. Kershaw, who, you know, he doesn't get into this stuff. But yeah. Kershaw was watching. He didn't look and follow the ball at all. He just kept his eyes on Grisham. And as I said in the open that we did, I can't confirm this, but I thought I heard him yell at him, go. Like, start running.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't think he was happy about that. And certainly the other Dodger players weren't happy about it. Grissom was going back and forth. And, you know, this is a continuation of the unwritten rules conversation that we have all the time. Yeah. And I'm a little bit torn on this one. I think because of the fact that Kershaw never engages in this stuff and he's incredibly respectful. Like, this is not Madison Bumgarner getting angry every time he gives up a home run. And I think that's what the Dodgers players reacted to, with the fact that Clayton was clearly chapped with what Trent Grisham did. But on the other hand, you know what? Grisham didn't look at him. He just looked at his teammates. He knew he killed it. And then he started running around the bases. What was your take?
Yeah. And I know I'm reading Grisham's comments after the game. He said it happened naturally in the moment. It's a big situation off of a big pitcher in a big game. I guess I can buy that. This one, I don't know, this one for some reason rubbed me a little bit the wrong way. And maybe because it is Clayton Kershaw. You're not going to get a classier act in the game than Kershaw. But you know what? I guess in the end, it makes for good baseball. It makes this rivalry even more intense. I'll be curious to see if anything happens tonight. I don't think so, but there's no doubt the Dodgers were chirping at Grisham when he crossed home plate. So we'll see what happens tonight. But yeah, it felt a little wrong to me for some reason.
The situation kind of reminded me of when Jose Bautista had the all-time bat flip in the postseason for the Toronto Blue Jays, because the reaction for Bautista in that moment was certainly outsized. Like, you didn't see that very often. But then you're thinking back at it, you're like, that was a huge home run when Bautista hit it. And last night, Grisham's home run off of Clayton Kershaw, future Hall of Famer, that was a huge home run.
Yeah, tied the game at one in the sixth inning after Kershaw had dominated the first five, you know, lefty on lefty. So that's a big hit for a young player, you know, who's still trying to prove that he's a really good major league player. So I get it. Yeah, I guess I'll buy his explanation that he wasn't trying to show Kershaw up and he just got, you know, excited in the moment. So we'll give Grisham a pass for this one. We'll see what happens down the road.
And you mentioned Cody Bellinger struggling. We, of course, had him on Sunday Night Baseball, and you know, we talked about all of his struggles on inside fastballs, on pitches on the inner third of the plate. And after that game, I was thinking about it as he was flailing. And in his last plate appearance, Dave Roberts working to pump him up from the dugout, clapping every time he fouled off a pitch. And I was thinking to myself, I can't remember an accomplished hitter looking that bad at the plate. Like, he really looked lost the other night when we had him. A few years ago, I saw the same thing in Bryce Harper, and actually mechanically was a little bit the same. Remember when Bryce went through that period where he kept falling off into the first base dugout with his swing, and his timing was off, and his mechanics were off? That's a little bit like what I'm seeing in Cody Bellinger. Like, he really looks like he's flailing and just desperately trying to get some sense of where his swing is at right now.
Yeah, and I know you ran some of those stats in your blog the other day, and you know how he's really just, you know, hopeless against inside fastballs. And I know he had some of those same issues 2 years ago, not to this extent. But yeah, the book is out on him, you know, hard and inside, and he is not hitting that pitch right now. And that's a, you know, look, let's be honest, it's a problem for the Dodgers, because Bellinger and Muncy, you know, were their two best offensive players last year. Jock Peterson, who normally crushes right-handers, he's not doing that. So, look, the lineup's good because there's no obvious holes, 1 through 9, but they need those big left-handed hitters to start hitting. And, you know, look, last night, D'Nelson Lamet just, look, this kid is unbelievable. You know, he shut them down, and they're supposed to be able to hit right-handed pitchers, and they're, you know, struggling a little bit right now.
Hitters will tell you that it really does take a long time, a lot of offseason work to make substantive changes with a swing. But I am going to be curious as we go forward in the next few days about whether or not you're going to see a change from Cody. Alex Rodriguez talked about how he just stands on top of the plate. And Alex was saying, boy, he's got to give himself some more room to deal with that inside fastball. And so even in a short term, I wonder if we're going to see some adjustments from him. Because the Dodgers certainly, I just have a hard time seeing them go all the way through the postseason with both Muncy and Bellinger struggling in the way that they have. The other big game last night, White Sox and Twins, the White Sox win. What was your take on that?
Yeah, I watched that game. It was a weird game, you know, 3-1. They scored twice in the eighth. It looked like a pitcher's duel, but it wasn't. I think the Twins left 15 runners on. The White Sox left 12 runners on. They, you know, finally pushed across those winning runs with the help of two walks by Taylor Rogers out of the bullpen. Hey, the White Sox, they're 21-5 since August 16th, I think. So right now, they're the best team in the American League, right, Buster? I mean, they have the best record, the best run differential. The AL Central probably is the best division in that league.
Yeah.
And they are red hot. Tim Anderson, who had a big double in that game, he's leading the majors in batting average again. Nobody thought he could repeat a batting title because he had such a fluky BABIP last year, but he's doing it again. Jose Abreu is an MVP candidate. Luis Robert is, you know, a sort of top five MVP candidate. They are just really, really impressive right now.
My question is, I was getting ready for a radio appearance in Toronto this morning, and I was, you know, thinking about the Yankees and Blue Jays who start a series today, and we'll get to that in a moment. But unlike the National League, where it does feel like, boy, you don't want to play the Padres or the Dodgers in the first round, I don't know if the seeding matters at all in the American League. Like, if the White Sox win the division, that's great. You get that. But does it really matter whether they're a 1 or a 4 or an 8? Because you don't have fans in the stands. There's not really a home field. And I don't feel like that. And I agree with your take. I think right now the White Sox are the best team in the American League. But I don't look at any of these teams as being a super team per se. And while I like the White Sox, I do wonder about how the relative youth of their roster will play in the postseason, especially with all the swing and miss they have and some of the defensive issues they have. And so while we're going to focus a lot as we go down the stretch on where these teams land in the seeding, from a practical standpoint, does it really make that much of a difference?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. In fact, right now, I guess the Indians are the number 8 seed. They're tied with the Yankees for that 7th and 8th seed. Do you want to face Shane Bieber in the first game of a best of three? no way. So your best bet might be to finish the third seeded team, I think, has the advantage because they're playing the number 2 team from the AL West, who's not going to be a good team unless Justin Verlander comes back, and you don't want to face him if he's healthy. So, but I'm with you on the White Sox. Yeah, their one flaw, they strike out a lot and they don't walk, a lot. So there is that concern that a good pitcher, can really get them to chase pitches out of the zone, which is what Shane Bieber does better than anybody this year. I don't think you want to finish first, but it's not really a big deal in the AL.
No, and let's face it, postseason adrenaline is not going to be as much of a factor this year because there are no fans in the stands. But we've seen many cases in the past where young teams, they need a year of sort of getting acclimated to October before they settle in. And I wonder if that's what's going to happen with the White Sox. We'll just have to wait and see. As they say, Yankees, Blue Jays start a 3-game series today. David Garcia going up against Taiwan Walker. We're talking about it being an interesting series because the Yankees came in as favorites and they're trying to catch the Blue Jays or a half game ahead. According to Fangraphs, as of this morning, the Yankees' chance of making the postseason, 99.5%. The Jays, 98.2%. One of them is going to be the 8 seed or the 7 seed, but again, it doesn't seem to be making a lot of difference. I think, especially for the Yankees, it's going to come down to how well they play down the stretch.
Yeah, Yankees really saved their season with that 4-game sweep over Baltimore where they allow 3 runs in 4 games, so the pitching finally came around. Yeah, this is a bigger series about the Blue Jays and what we can learn about them because they have, 7 games against the Yankees the rest of the way. So, they've had a soft schedule, relatively speaking, of late. So let's see what they can do against a good team.
Yeah, and for me, 2 guys who are interesting for them are Taiwan Walker and Robbie Ray, who from time to time in the past have demonstrated they can be pretty good, and they're very streaky. And if they can get one of those guys, throwing well as we go into the postseason, it makes them more dangerous. I do think it's big that they got Bo Bichette back.
Yeah, no, Bo is huge. Robbie Ray had a good outing last start, after being a complete disaster when he was with the Diamondbacks this year. Yeah, that's a good point. The Blue Jays are actually really trying to figure out that rotation. Ryu's their number 1 guy, but it's not clear who their number 2 starter is. Taiwan Walker has pitched well in 3 outings with them, but 9 walks, 11 strikeouts, that's not a ratio you want. So, yeah, they're really figuring out that rotation. So that's what they need to get settled these last 2 weeks.
Big news in baseball yesterday with Steve Cohen now having an agreement with the Sterling Partnership, the ownership of the Mets. Reportedly, the deal is for $2.4-ish billion. And Steve Cohen would immediately become the richest owner in baseball. And I know there's a lot of, hand-wringing going on among reporters about whether or not he's going to be approved by the other owners. If he wasn't, it would be ridiculous because he's already minority owner.
Yeah.
He's already been approved as a minority owner. And a lot of questions, I think, could rightly be asked. Well, why did you approve him in the first place? But I fully expect this is going to get done. And I fully expect this is going to completely change the landscape of baseball in New York and in Major League Baseball because a big market team is going to act like a big market team in the Mets.
Yeah, yeah. I'm with you. I assume he does get approved. The concern is his hedge fund paid a $900 million fine for some criminal fraud charges a few years ago. So that would be that's the red flag that people are talking about. But yeah, let's admit it. The Wilpons spent like a upper mid-market team, not like the New York Mets should be spending. And there's a lot of talent on that team. They've obviously had the pitching injuries this year. I would love to see a new owner get in there, you know, go out, buy a huge free agent, you know, maybe you sign Trevor Bauer to a 1-year deal or something to supplement that rotation. So I would love to see that for the Mets.
I got to believe that Jeff Berry, who represents JT Realmuto, is just beside himself with joy. Like, yeah, he has potentially a legitimate bidding war coming up for the best catcher in baseball. The Mets need a catcher long term. The Phillies have interest in keeping Realmuto. Bryce Harper's been lobbying for it. But that seems to me, for the upcoming winter, to be the most obvious candidate, because I can't think of an example of a someone buying a major league team and not wanting to step in and make a big move right away. I mean, that is just right out of the playbook. Whenever anybody comes in, now within 2 years, there might be regret. Or maybe there was regret for other owners doing that. But for Steve Cohen, with all the money that he has, it's a drop in the bucket. And it's a statement to Mets fans. And it's the easiest impact move that you can make, getting the best catcher in baseball. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so, especially if it's a bidding war with the Yankees, potentially, in Realmuto, if the Yankees decide to move in that direction. But yeah, look, Cohen is a Mets fan, so I'll be curious to see if he acts like a fan with enormous, you know, pocketbook to play with. And that's a perfect move. It's one move what they need. Like I said, Trevor Bauer would be a nice fit. Anyway, yeah, I think he's going to spend. Why do you want to own a major league team if you don't want to spend all your money?
Yeah, Trevor Bauer being coupled with Jacob deGrom in the 2021 Mets, that would also be fun. And who knows, maybe Steve could convince Trevor to give up on this thought of he's only going to take 1 year at a time with his contract, because he could make a lot of money. But the one I'm gearing up for, like, I cannot wait for the Francisco Lindor sweepstakes. That is going to be amazing whenever that takes place. And maybe it starts this winter with the Indians because, of course, you know, the expectation is at some point they're going to trade him before he becomes a free agent. We saw last winter the Dodgers trading for Mookie Betts a year before he became a free agent. Maybe teams like the Yankees, like the Mets, go all in and try to pry Lindor away from the Indians this winter so they can have a window to sign him, as the Dodgers did with Mookie.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Ahmed Rosario has just not developed. He's still young, but the bat has regressed this year. The defense is average at best. I think that's being generous. He has a good arm, but he just doesn't have the range, you know. So they really, you know, need a long-term shortstop, and obviously Lindor would be another perfect fit.
Last one for you. It's actually a Bleacher tweet we got from Matt Nagel, who asks, any insight as to why Major League Baseball has banned alcohol in the postseason celebrations? I can see wanting to adhere to social distancing, but can't they do that on the field? When I saw this, my initial thought was, Dave, was this is kind of like the waiver that you sign to go into a concert or something, where it's like Major League Baseball, because – you know, they want to, you know, protect themselves in case players get sick or, you know, there's some kind of an outbreak. I just think this is them just saying, you know what, we've gone all this way playing this sport under these unusual circumstances. So we're going to ask you not to go crazy spraying alcohol over yourself and breathing all over each other in the clubhouse, while understanding that they're not really going to be able to control it.
Right. Do you think... is any of this just that it's maybe a bad visual with everything going on with COVID? We don't want to end our season with, you know, champagne and beer, you know, celebrations.
That could be. That may well be. It does feel a little bit over-officious. And I did see some reaction on social media yesterday from players along the lines of, really? Because you and I, we know it's going to happen. We know that they're going to go crazy. It's kind of like when we got those first health and safety protocol details and on there was no high fives. And I'm like, yeah, okay, right.
Yeah, that lasted about 2 minutes.
Right, exactly. And you knew that that wasn't going to stand. I think that's the case with this as well. All right, sir, I appreciate it.
You bet, Buster, anytime.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Jumping into the numbers.
After evaluating millions of pieces of data in the blink of an eye, the winner is Cincinnati by 200 points. Why, you worthless hunk of junk.
This is Hembo Knows.
And Hembo, of course, is Paul Embiid. He's a researcher for ESPN. He's a honcho on the show Get Up. He tells us he's the head honcho. Mike Greenberg says that he is just a wild partier through whom Greeny lives vicariously. You know, that that intro gets longer every time we do it. I think at some point I'm just going to do multi-layered. Maybe we'll come up with a second open for you.
I appreciate that. I'm actually pretty close to adding that to my LinkedIn page because it's become such a part of the fabric of the show.
Well, there you go. All right. So last night we had the unwritten rules pop up again. Trent Grisham, Clayton Kershaw. What was your take?
I don't think it's appropriate to show up a picture at that time, especially not a picture of Clayton Kershaw's stature. I heard what Dave Roberts had to say after the game, and I happen to agree with him 100%. But that being said, this push and pull between sort of the old school that the Dodgers sort of represent and the new school, which the Padres sort of represent, just sort of adds another fun layer to what is becoming baseball's best rivalry this season. The Padres are full of guys like this, and they don't care. And candidly, I like it, and it's good for the sport. So even though I don't favor the notion of showing up a pitcher and pimping my home runs and all that stuff, you know, I'm very much on the, you know, old school end of that because of my, you know, time as a player and sort of the way that I learned to play the game growing up. This is an objectively good thing for the game of baseball, and I hope that it creates even more fireworks between these two teams, which at the moment are probably the two best teams in the National League.
I really, really wish I could have a conversation with Clayton Kershaw today and ask him with the benefit of getting moving past it, how he now feels about it. Because as we talked about with Dave Schoenfeld, it's not something he ever engages in. Like, that's not Clayton. And the fact is that if he took his eyes off of Grisham, he wouldn't have seen it. Like, part of the reason why he was offended was because he kept his eyes locked on Grisham. And on the other hand, Grisham wasn't looking out at him. Right. We've been saying as long as you don't personalize it for the pitcher, it's OK. But I know you're Mr. Old School on this stuff.
Well, that's also the line of thinking that I always used with Madison Bumgarner, who would like allow the homer and then follow the hitter all the way around until right. The hitter acknowledged. And then he would engage. So this is yes, you're right. This is sort of out of character for Clayton Kershaw. But when you're in the moment, of course, it's very different. I bet you. If you asked him a couple hours after the game, cooler heads would have prevailed and he would have said, you know what, in hindsight, I probably shouldn't have provoked the situation that way because that's not like me.
What do you make of Cody Bellinger?
Well, I watched his last 50 at bats or so this morning and came away, Buster, with one primary takeaway that's clear and obvious, and that's he must make an effort to go the other way if he wants to turn his season around. Buster, Bellinger has played 45 games and has produced 6 hits to the opposite field. He has generated a total of 5 line drives on his backside swings, which has obviously gone a long way in crippling his season. And what I discovered was that his MVP drop-off is somewhat historic. He's on pace to become the first reigning MVP since Cal Ripken Jr. in 1992 to produce a below-league average batting line as measured by OPS+.
And I know that hurts you to even mention that statistic with your lifetime hero in Cal Jr. The Cleveland Indians are an interesting team. We were just talking with Dave about how even if they wind up being the number eight seed, that's a team you don't want to play because they get the best pitcher in the American League. This is a team that has a lot of great stuff with it and a lot of not so great stuff.
Yes, their pitching staff buster owns an ERA plus of 144. That's 44% above average after adjusting for their league and their ballpark. That is on pace to break the American League record held by the 1926 A's, which is a staff anchored by Lefty Grove. That's how good they pitch. On the other extreme, the Indians own an historically bad outfield. Cleveland outfielders have combined to produce a .293 slugging percentage, 27 extra base hits, and 467 at-bats. According to Elias, no team's outfield in the live ball era, which dates to 1920, has produced a slugging percentage below .300 over the course of a full season.
What do you got on Nelson Cruz?
Buster, this guy's an ageless wonder, and I dug in this morning and came away with three reasons why I think he is still at the top of his game. The first of which is he absolutely obliterates mistakes. Cruz leads all hitters in slugging percentage and in isolated power on pitches in the zone. You can't beat him there. Secondly, Buster, he rakes with a platoon advantage. Cruz is batting .465 with an OPS of .1447. And at-bats against left-handed pitching, both of those marks rank second in the league behind only Tim Anderson. And third, Buster, he still possesses that big, raw power. 30% of Cruz's fly balls and line drives have resulted in a home run. That is the highest rate in the league. We can only contextualize that number going back to 2003, but the only player with a higher mark over a season was Giancarlo Stanton in 2017. That was the year he hit 59 homers, and that's how good Nelson Cruz still is at the age of 40.
As someone who's a fan of the Phillies, what do you think of Steve Cohen's purchase of the Mets moving forward?
Well, I mean, I would say I'm most happy that it's out of the news because I'm so tired of reading about how the Mets are sold and then not sold. Ultimately, you know, it's over the last several seasons, it's been nice. The organization has been so unstable. And I think obviously the finances of that go a long way. To be totally candid, I'm an ESPN guy like you are. I was sort of pulling for A-Rod just from that perspective, just because I sort of wanted to see him get involved in the game. I have actually really liked what I've seen from the Marlins since Derek Jeter purchased the team. But otherwise, I'm fairly agnostic on the decision, other than being slightly disappointed that it wasn't A-Rod.
Wow. I thought for sure as a Phillies fan, you're like, oh, no. Someone is going to come in and to suck out the financial oxygen, the advantage that we theoretically had as the big market team that acted like a big market team in the National League East.
Well, I suppose that's certainly an unintended consequence of it, if indeed that's indeed the direction that they go, which you would assume they would, because operating in that market, again, but it's been a long time since the Mets have spent a lot of money. I think you're right. It probably will undercut, in some sense, the advantage that the Phillies have.
But as we've learned
over the course of time, like that doesn't always translate to wins and losses. So if the Mets come in and they don't spend shrewdly, that might wind up helping the Phillies. I don't view that as nearly as big an advantage as I would composing a front office of really smart people that I really trust and would be afraid of on the other side.
Yeah, we'll see how you feel when I call you during the wintertime and have you come on after JT Realmuto agrees to terms with the Mets. Okay.
Yeah. Let's hold that one for a rainy day and not think about that. Until then.
All right. Thanks, Emo.
Later, boys.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Tuesday. First up, Andrew DeSalvo at DeSalvotion writes in, what's going on with Christian Yelich this year? I have to assume we are past small sample size time now, and he is hitting sub-200. What are the evaluators saying about him this year?
It is amazing how many great players are struggling. You know, Cody Bellinger, we talked about him with Hembo, how bad he looks. You know, Javier Baez has not looked good. I looked at some of Yelich's numbers, and the thing that jumped out at me was the swinging strike rate for him is at 12.4%. That is the highest of his career, and he is especially struggling with off-speed stuff. I kind of wonder if it's just a case where with the weird training schedule and, you know, the ramp up and ramp down, he may have been one of those guys really affected by that.
Last one for today, we have Christopher Savage at Savage and Beast writes in, since the NFL has allowed for limited numbers of fans at games, any chance Major League Baseball will do so as well? Maybe for the playoffs? Maybe? Probably not.
I read something. Rob Manfred was doing some sort of a presentation somewhere yesterday, and he mentioned the possibility that they may actually have fans in the stands. Some fans in the stands. It would be a limited number for some of the postseason games. That would be interesting. Now, how many times have we heard owners say, yeah, I think maybe it's something we'll do. Maybe we'll look at it. And then in the end, they don't. And I suspect that if you're a member of the Players Association, if you're a player and you feel like everything's been going well with health and safety protocol, you may not be wild about introducing a whole bunch of more people into your ballpark.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel. They've made it to this point without fans, and you know they've had their issues trying to keep people healthy. So why mix it up now, especially in the postseason? They're going to have the bubble situation going on. So we shall see. But that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Thanks for listening, everyone. Subscribe to, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We would very much appreciate it.
That's it for today. My thanks to Dave, to Hembo, and to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on race is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.